I'm Ben Smith, and you're listening to Beyond the Barbell Podcast.
All right, welcome back to Beyond the Barbell. I am Blair Morrison.
And I am Ben Alderman, and we are sitting here with the director of the CrossFit Games, the co-director of CrossFit Training, and also the man behind his own Instagram, at the Dave Castro. Dave Castro, what's up, man?
How you doing?
Thanks for letting us come down to HQ and hang out for a little bit.
Thanks for inviting me to be on the show.
Yeah, this is a huge red building you guys got here.
Yeah, it is a big building here at HQ.
I had done a little tour with one of the guys here a couple months ago, and I was surprised. I thought you guys had like an office here, mm-hmm. you know, and then you walk around and 90% of this building is you guys.
Yeah, easily. We started off back in the day with just an office in this building, and then it slowly expanded and grew, and we took over more space and more space. And now, as you see, we have the whole second floor. And downstairs, we don't have all downstairs, but we have a lot of space down there.
I think like it's generally assumed, or at least from my perspective, that HQ is a pretty small, kind of like close-knit, like family-style, you know, I won't say business, but CrossFit is a business. But like HQ seems like a small, really, you see the same people, the same names. Like a building this large, you got to have a decent number of people now working.
Yeah, we, you know, HQ, we have about 150 people that work for us. They're not all in this building. In this building, we probably have 60 or 70. And there are definitely like, there are some faces of CrossFit and of HQ that you see a lot of. But behind those faces and behind that core, there's a lot of people that work for us that are supporting all of this, that do various tasks, and a lot of people that you don't ever see. There's even people sometimes I'll see around here that I've never even met before. So it's pretty big. I mean, we have a lot of people that are here and work for us throughout the country.
Right. You were saying off air that, you know, you live down in Southern California.
Yep.
Boz is in, you know, Oakland, which is not far. EC is somewhere else.
San Diego.
Yep. And these are kind of some of the faces that you see all the time. But like right now, you guys are all here.
Yep.
Why?
Preparing, getting ready for some of the upcoming. Actually, the EC and Boz stuff, they're here for some seminar related stuff. I'm up here for games related stuff, working with the team. We have the games team. They essentially work out of here. Justin Berg, Rory, all the guys you see on the show, Pat, they're all out of this office. And so for the core games team, I'm the only one that's down south. So I come up here quite often to meet with them and to go over stuff and look at some of the things we have to do for the upcoming season. All the guys you see on the show, or for the upcoming games in this case, they're all out of here. And the show is filmed completely out of this office in the studio downstairs.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep.
So you mentioned, Blair actually mentioned that we see a lot of the same faces, similar faces. Is that kind of keeping that core team kind of helped ease some of the growing pains maybe that's happened over the last 10 years or so with CrossFit?
Yeah, for sure. Having some familiar faces and understanding how people are going to react and how people handle things and how people are going to understanding what some of your peers are going to do in certain situations help with the growing and the growing pains of being involved in an organization like this for the past 10 years. If it was constantly rotating new people through, you know, as a new person comes in, you have to learn them. You have to learn how they interact, how they operate. It would be it'd be challenging. But as it is, this core group, the core of us that have come up with it in the past decade, it's been nice to work with them and be, you know, understand how we're going to all have to grow and adapt, and we grow and adapt together.
For you as the games director, what has been the hardest part of that growth? You know, like, I mean, you and I met in 2009. I was at the games that year.
You're always rubbing in my face, bro, that you've been to the games.
Ben's never been to the games. Okay. Ben's never been there, so he can't really add anything to this part of the conversation.
Five times regionals, five times top 10. Okay,
that's good.
Bro, I've been doing that for half a decade. Yeah,
that's something pretty, to be proud legit. Of there.
Yeah. Anyways, obviously things have changed a lot, and you know, Ben and I being older athletes, like we love to talk about the good old days, you know, and like you have great perspective on that. So I'm kind of curious what the biggest challenge for you as a director has been kind of adapting the games in this phenomenal event to the increased number of people watching, participating, all that.
The biggest challenge has been not to get caught up in the past and get stuck there and just be like,
come on,
we've got it. No, it's good. It's good how you described it and how you even led into it. It's one of the big challenges is not getting caught up into how we used to do things. And I even mean in 5 years, a decade ago, but even last year. And one of the biggest challenges is not being afraid to change and not being afraid to go against what's popular or what everyone wants to see and to do something outside of the box to take risks. As we've grown, as we're this big, 10 years at it now, have major sponsors on ESPN, it's still those things can't take you away from who you are at your core, and you still shouldn't be afraid to take some risks in doing the things we do. And so those have been some of the biggest challenges is not being afraid to stay
like
true
for
to
example,
who we are.
Like, what do you mean, like, in terms of risks?
Like programming, you mean?
Programming things, making decisions that aren't popular. Look, one of the big ones would be 2 years ago when we went from, 17, 18 regionals and cut it back down to what we have now, 8. And that was a very unpopular decision, but that was a decision made to make for the right reasons, to make the competition at the finals more legit, essentially, to make everyone who went to the games their much higher level because we combined regions. And some regions where people who were getting to the games just because they had a spot wasn't as valid as some of these other regions where there were some people left behind. And even now, in the current format, that's still arguably happening. But I think this is a better expression of what we were doing. That would be an unpopular decision, even among sponsors. You know, among some of our sponsors, they'd prefer to have presence at 17 regions rather than just 8 or a reduced number. But it was still the right decision for the competition and the direction it needed to go.
Oh, I'm so excited that you brought this up, because this is like a huge topic of conversation every year around regionals, right? Because every region's like, oh, which region's the strongest? Oh, this guy should have been there. He's fitter than this guy or whatever. But the sponsor thing is huge. And people have asked me, do you think that they'll ever go to just, you know, the top 50 guys and the top 50 girls, regardless of region? And I said, the only way they could ever do that is if they held them on the same day and the same weekend. And there's no way that the sponsors would ever allow that to happen, because it basically pushes out any small or like mid-sized sponsor, because they can't afford to have a presence at multiple places on the same weekend.
Interestingly, one of the strong arguments for that then is, if why do that, then why not just qualify straight from the Open?
Right.
So
you need real judges, right?
It's good to test them in person and to have the I still want to test people and see them act under the heat of a competition, see how they're going to do. Because some people do, it's great to do the Open in your home gym under your own environment, under your control. But doing this stuff now on a stadium floor with thousands of people watching, with multiple events in a day, with short rests in between events, having all that pressure.
Yeah.
You have to get through all of that too. It's definitely different than just doing the Open. Yeah. So that's needed too. I don't think the format we have now will probably change, and will probably change soon. But it's worked, but it'll still probably change.
Yeah, just to always, like you said, always
push
forward.
It's still a brand new sport. It's still in its infancy. It's still in its early stages of existence. So we've got to try to find the best way to do this and what makes the most sense.
And I think a lot of people don't necessarily see our sport as in its infancy. You know, some people like to think that it's already at a level that's like, just we should hollow it right now and be like, this is it, you know. But it's really cool to, you know, for me, you know, I mean, I know that I've got, you know, a few seasons left, but in 10 or 15 years, this sport is going to look radically different. You know, people are going to be much stronger.
And you know what? It's going to look radically different, and it should. And if it didn't, something would be wrong. Something's wrong on our end. Yeah. And so that's one of the important, to go back to some of the challenges, is just even, you know, our own fans and our own community, they get upset when there's change to the format or to the structure. And so that's some of the challenges in running it, dealing with that. Not dealing with it, but just, you know, it's there.
Yeah, and even though they're upset, it's just that they care, right? And they're passionate about it. And you want to keep that fire stoked. Yeah. One thing that I think you said it. Anyways, I didn't hear it from you, but somebody else was mentioning it, that there's going to be an adjustment next year in the Masters categories.
Potential, yeah.
The 35 to 39.
Yeah.
Right, which that got a lot of people excited as well. I didn't hear anybody complaining about that one.
So this year, so the statement I made during the Open was, in 2015 at the Games, there was one male athlete that was over 35, and that is Neil Maddox. He was actually 37. The rest were under 35. On the women's side, there was a few women, two or three, that were over 35, a couple in their 30s. And that last year was a big eye opener in the sense that, yeah, this sport is becoming younger. It's, you have to be young to excel. And people in their 30s are going to start having a more difficult time qualifying. This year, there's no one that's over 35 on the male side that qualified for the individuals. And there's one, I think it's Becca Voigt, on the female side that qualified.
Right, and she's just
and she
just
is turned 35,
yeah,
right?
She just turned 35. So
you could say she's an outlier.
She's an outlier. And there's going to be there's always outliers. A great topic, because there's always, you know, Chris Spieler was an outlier, not for age, but for size.
Right.
Someone like, Asia Bartow was an outlier, not for age again, but for also size on the big side of things. And so outliers are always going to be there, and they're always going to shock us, and they're always going to be exactly that, outliers, and they're okay. They'll, you know, even if we did make a 35 to 39-year-old division next year, I'm not saying someone that's 35 will never qualify for the games, because there still might be those outliers, but it's trending towards, it looks like that there's not going to be people in that age qualifying for the games unless they're an extreme outlier.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Grundler was knocking on the door, what, like four or five years in a row, and he was over 40.
And the thing about Grundler, too, the interesting point there is that was at a time when that was possible.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is the competition wasn't as developed. That was a few years ago. There was less people, again, participating. Now, as there's more and more people participating, the potential of that happening dwindles.
And the younger athletes that are, you know, physically more durable, they've had time to accumulate the skills that some of the older athletes had over them.
Yeah, they started training at 10 years old, right?
Yeah.
So it's like where I started training when I was 26, I think I started doing CrossFit.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So like, I think 5 years ago, I told Chad Augustine, do you know who Chad Augustine is? Masters athlete. I told him, I said, hey, in 10 years, every single CrossFit Games athlete, will have a 300-pound snatch, a 400-pound clean and jerk, a 500-pound back squat, and a 600-pound deadlift. 3, 4, 5, 6.
All the women, too? Ben, that's pretty
right?
strong.
Yeah, yeah, right. All the male athletes, right? And so, and he said, no, you're crazy. And I said, no, dude, that's going to happen. I told him that 5 years ago. And I said, my goal is to cut that timeline in half, right, through my training so I can get there.
Yeah.
But, and I think now we are definitely approaching a point where that is...
These dudes are so strong.
They are so
that
strong,
is
right?
That's very... It's a very near reality.
Yeah, and I said,
some of the field has that.
And some of the field does have that, right? Yeah. So in 10 years, are you still going to be programming for the games? And how are you going to, like, how do you lead people past that 3, 4, 5, 6 or past like a 5-minute mile or past, you know?
So for the answer to the first question, in 10 years, am I still going to be programming for the games? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Maybe. The other question on the other side, I don't think I programmed to those. Here's the thing. Those things are impressive and those things are important, but they're not the driving factor. You know, it's interesting. Even in yourself, you didn't mention, and they have 30 muscle-ups for time in 3 minutes. And they can do 25 strict handstand push-ups. Because some of that stuff is as equally impressive and as necessary. And so those strength numbers alone don't mean much.
Sure.
Those strength numbers combined with the fact that, yeah, these guys are doing also 30 muscle-ups in 3 minutes and doing, let's say, 30 strict handstand push-ups and able to do, now let's talk specific workouts, Fran in under 215 and some of these, Helen in under, you know, 730, under 8. That makes those strength numbers impressive.
Exactly.
And so it's that whole package. I try not to get caught up in just looking at the strength aspect, where I think a lot of our community, and Instagram's really made that accessible. People, it's so easy to show your strength numbers on Instagram and less show some of your work capacity, you know, some of the longer stuff. So strength is, even for the last 5 years, been a struggle for people. And, you know, in level one, we talk about increasing your work capacity across broad time and modal domains, and how much strength do you want? Well, not so much strength that you decrease your work capacity across broad time and modal domains. Do we believe you can be too strong? Absolutely. Some of these athletes can be too strong. But that being said, that's still going to come up. And so at the point you have a 300-pound snatch, the 400-pound, what was your other numbers?
Clean and jerk.
400-pound clean.
500-pound back squat, 600-pound deadlift.
Those numbers might be enough for you to be a high-level CrossFitter, but that same guy, if he had a 330-pound snatch and a 450-pound clean and jerk, well, he might have just passed that level of being fit.
Some diminishing return there?
Yeah, being too strong. Mm-hmm. And so we'll also notice, you know, there's some athletes now you can argue that are getting too strong and that are losing some of, and maybe for them, 275 snatch or 280 snatch for that athlete is too strong because they've lost some of the gymnastics capabilities because their gas isn't as good as it was in the past. So there's a fine line with the strength stuff, but naturally all those numbers are coming up, and naturally that will happen. You know, Rich has the 300-pound snatch. No, he doesn't have a 400-pound clean.
Like 385 or something like that,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
He's like right there.
I don't know if any of these guys, any of the Ben, Rich, Matt, what's Matt clean and jerk?
He's around not, 385 he's also. Yeah, he's somewhere around there.
I would say if any of them had it, I would say Ben.
Ben?
I don't think he's at four, though.
But yeah. I mean, they're all going to get there.
Yeah. So, but it's definitely...
But they're seeing what you're talking about, right? So they're not trying to chase... Like, I don't think Rich is in there, like, snatching every day.
Yeah,
trying
they're
to
not trying
snatch.
To get one rep, but that's just where they're going.
Yeah, it's
just
a byproduct of the training, right?
Yep, exactly. So, and well, of course, the programming changes because of that. You know, at the point where everyone's snatching over 300, something like this workout we did in regionals with the squat snatch, maybe the one rep max isn't 260, or the two at the end isn't 265. And, you know, what we saw there at the regionals, you wouldn't have seen that 2 or 3 years ago because that would have been too heavy. So naturally, the programming and what happens has to change as these athletes become more capable. Some stuff doesn't, but other stuff does.
The programming, obviously a huge challenge, and like the main thing that you deal with when it comes to the, you know, the open regionals games. One of the biggest criticisms of it that I've heard, and one of the biggest challenges, I think, honestly, is how do you, before the games, before you have this, you know, set up where you have everybody together, you have multiple days, you have, you know, a lot of flexibility in arena. Like, how do you test the endurance component of an athlete going into, before you get to the games? Because in the open, limited by equipment, limited by video length, right? The regionals, it's kind of the same thing. It's got to all be replicated in multiple locations. Like, outside of holding it at a track, like, how do you create, how do you try to create that sort of stimulus so that it's not just gymnastics and strength and gas that's tested?
That's such a Blair question because he's such the endurance
it's
guy.
It's annoying. I hear that he asks me this question every day like it's new, you know.
Well, there's some interesting – you have some great points there. In the open, going 20 minutes, you know, for a lot of our guys, if you hit a 20-minute workout and you're performing at one of the higher levels and you're doing extremely well, the chances are for the longer stuff you're going to be one of the higher-ranked guys anyway. So I think there is some endurance tested in those longer –
in the 20-minute workouts.
In the longer workout. I say longer in the traditional sense. In the 20-minute workouts, there's definitely some endurance, even in the 15 to 20-minute range. That's tested that will translate over to being expressed in longer challenges, expressed well. In the regionals, you know, again, same thing. Some of those mid-range to longer-range workouts test that endurance to a good degree, not 100%, but they're doing it and they're working. And, you know, bringing in the true form, is that 100% running? No. Is it the closest thing we can get to running at that level with the tools we have? Yes.
It's, bro, it is way, way different than running.
It is way different from
it
running.
Is hard.
But it is a...
I'm not good at either one.
It's running in sand.
I'm not good at either one.
It's a similar simulation of running. It's something very similar. And so... So it was one tool to try to address that and get closer to getting some of that. Even though in that workout it's not an over 20-minute long workout.
Right.
And at regionals it's a challenge to have really long workouts because of the amount of heats. You know, you'd be there, even the 20-minute long workouts, you're watching those for a really long time.
It's not spectator friendly.
No, not spectator friendly at all. When you get to the games, what we're able to do is we're able to do longer workouts, but one heat of them, so you can tolerate that. I can program a workout for 40 people that's going to last an hour, but it's all 40 of them going on at the same time.
Right.
So it's a little more digestible for fans and for the operation, essentially.
Is that why you moved Nate to Friday? Or, I mean, you know, moved Nate to Friday, but is that why you had the 20-minute workout on Friday this year? So that way it's like the kind of the lighter day?
Yeah, exactly. Kind of get it out of the way. Kind of just it's a lighter day in attendance. Not everyone goes there, but it's also the bigger test. It's also the longer test, so maybe not beat them up completely or get that out of the way when they're fresh, not have them do that as they're more beat up, especially with some of the more technical elements in that workout this year.
Could you do that same thing that you said, like 40 people, one heat at a regional?
It'd be very difficult. It'd be very hard because of equipment, because of judges, because of staffing, because, you know, and traditionally you think of a 40-person workout that I'm talking about. Where is that happening?
It's like
out in the, around the stadium, at the beach, you know what
right.
I mean?
There's like some distance to be covered to yeah. spread people
and
out.
We don't, I don't think we've ever done a 40-person workout in the tennis stadium at the Home Depot Center, and that is the equivalent to a regional floor.
Right.
Except it's actually a little smaller. The tennis stadium at the Home Depot Center is about 20 feet smaller than our regional floor. So we're constrained by that to not go those distances. Also, though, at the stage that all those people are there, I don't think the wrong people are there at that stage, and they're getting tested long, and it's a fine place to be getting tested long. It's not like, you know what, you might beat some of them at that long stuff there, but that also doesn't matter because you didn't have the strength or the gas or the and all the other capacity to get there. So the field that's being tested there in some of that longer stuff, it's okay.
You're saying at the games.
At the games, yeah. I'm saying at the games, it's appropriate for them to go longer because they're the best at the best in our sport, and they proved it through two stages. And this third stage, we're going to take them to a place that they haven't been before.
So then, you know, I think Blair pointed at me because there's a people like to categorize the open as the place where you kind of get like that, that, I don't know, they say motor. Mm-hmm. You know, motor gets tested there. And then at regionals, it's strength and skill. And then at the games, if those two generalizations are right, how do you see the games? And if they're wrong, could you recategorize those for us?
Yeah, I think it's wrong in the sense that, you know, the funny thing about the Open is I saw someone comment somewhere. I forgot who it was. Someone I didn't recognize, but he was someone who just barely missed qualifying for regionals. And he said how, yep, they didn't test strength again, and here we go. It's going to be all bodyweight specialists at regionals. And I was like, hey, did you even do 16.2? That's what I wanted to say. Tell anyone who qualified who did 16.2 that they didn't test strength. That was testing strength in the way we want to test and express strength. And to get through 16.2, to get to regionals, you had to do well on that. And to do well on that, you had to be strong. And so that's the type of strength we're looking at. So most of the workouts, I would say, don't test strength at the Open, but that workout definitely didn't. So there is elements of where strength is tested in
right,
the
Open. Right, and that's been a change in the last 2 years.
Couple years, yep. The year before, we had the just straight up one rep max squat clean and jerk. We didn't do anything like that this year, but this year we had that as the test. And then at the regionals, you know, I don't think it's just strength there. I think if you look at the workouts, there's a nice half and half blend. We try to strive for that. Half of the workouts are pretty lightweight and traditional. You know, when I programmed and created the pistol clean workout, one of the feedback I got from some of the internal team was like, oh, that clean's too light. It needs to be heavier. I'm like, trust me, at the reps and at that stage and with what that is, that's going to be heavy. And some of the people said that combo of those two workouts at that point was one of the most devastating parts of the weekend.
It was, in fact, the most devastating part of the weekend for yours truly.
Ben and I were talking about going in. We're like, hey, man, there's not a long chipper this year in regionals. That's going to be good for you. And then as I was watching that workout, I was like, damn, that is the long chipper. Like, that is it.
And you know what's funny, too, is and there was no heavy loading on any of that. The first half started with wall ball and pull up. The second half had the GHG or the pistols and the clean that was light, arguably lightweight. And people were dropping that and breaking it up. And, you know, it got heavy fast. So, you know, the workouts at regionals that become highlights are usually the heavy ones, but people will take those as highlights and forget about the light ones, even the thrusters at the end. I mean, you guys did 21-15-9 with 95-pound thrusters, lightweight, and rope climbs. So there's a nice balance, and I think people will just focus on the heavy stuff and the loading and not then forget about the light stuff at regionals. So I'm just saying that to contend the point of people say that regionals are heavy in gymnastics based. Yeah, there's a higher skill in the gymnastics for sure, but they're not just heavy. There is a heavy element, but there's also a balance there.
So then how do you delineate between the two when you're programming the Open versus regionals?
Well, the Open, you know, it's obviously it has to be more inclusive. So the ways to test strength have to be a little more clever in where it's testing strength by these gates. Essentially, someone like myself is out of the workout when I get to 185, but you guys are advancing much through that. So it's inclusive that we can all play And that same workout also is going to allow people with strength to express it. So you got to figure out how to do that. And every workout can't be like that in the open, but one can, and it's cool. At the regionals now, like, I really do believe when we're programming for the regionals, we're programming for the top five guys. Top guys who are going to make it to the games. It's going to be challenging to them, for them. And what happens in that is you get some people who get exposed and who just get hammered. There was actually someone in your region who couldn't even deadlift the 405.
Yeah, I remember that. I was standing at it the whole time.
I was blown away by that. That tripped me out. That was – I wish I knew who that was. I'll figure it out. But
He had crushed one of the other workouts.
Did he?
The strict muscle-up workout, yeah. I think.
Yeah. And honestly, had you not put that in there, right, he might have snuck through. So, I mean, it seems –
yeah. Yeah, so that – and, you know, there was really no one else had issues with that.
Right.
I mean, everyone was able to do that, nor should they at this stage. Now, at the games, I guess we're trying to test the fittest to find the fittest alive, but we go a little longer. We introduce new elements, but there's also still a balance of still having a lot of traditional stuff. And, you know, again, with the games, kind of like with the regionals, people will focus on some of the crazy events we do, but they won't focus on the traditional events we did. You know, last year, the pegboard was a big controversial thing we added.
For the record, loved it.
Good, thank you. I went to a gym, this is a great story. I went to a CrossFit gym in San Diego when I was doing all my drop-ins. And I walked into this one gym for the drop-in, and the coach goes, "Hey, Dave, I have a question for you." And I go, "Yeah, what is it?" He goes, "Whose stupid idea was it to program the pegboard?"
Oh,
and I was like, "Oh, mine, buddy." You know, so it's...
Your affiliate is revoked.
Yeah. But he was a nice guy other than that comment. You know, but there's some workouts at the games that are, you know, last year's bar muscle up and thruster workout, a traditional couple.
Yeah.
And we always try to put those just traditional workouts in expression. When you watch them, they might not have a traditional look because they're at an event. And what that means is, you know, advancing through and stuff like that. But that's for the visual. But it's still a traditional programmed workout.
So then if you still, just to kind of wrap this up, like, what, how do you categorize the games as far as in your head, you know, like I said, if you're looking at open is accessible, regionals is this, games is
a test to find the fittest alive, and some people aren't going to keep up or survive all of that is one way of looking at it. The games are the ultimate test to find the fittest alive, and there are going to be casualties in that, not literally casualties, but casualties in, like, the pegboard, people not being able to do it, being exposed, like the water issues we've had with people before who couldn't swim. Every year people are exposed, and that's what the games are going to do. They're going to expose people physically, and they're going to expose them mentally. The mental exposure and the mental test that the games is one of the biggest components, one of the biggest unspoken components of the whole weekend. It is a grueling physical test or mental test. It is grueling to do that stuff, and that's by design. It should be.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it needs to be.
Do you ever, like, at the games, program a workout? And then, I'm sure the answer is yes. But do you ever purposely over-program a workout? Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. There's stuff that we program knowing maybe very few are going to finish. There's definitely workouts we program that people won't finish in the time cap, especially at regionals. And it, you know, but it always pushes. There's maybe one or two or three or four that do finish. But there's a fine line there because you don't want to program something. Well, here's a good example. Let's go back to the pegboard. If every athlete who went out there couldn't climb it once, it would have been a disaster. And that's not what happened. You know, there was a handful of women who were able to complete all three ascents, and even more were able to do at least one. And then in the final heat of men, all the men were able to get up and down it three times and go do work on the rest of the stuff. Had that not been the case, had everyone just been standing at the pegboard and not been able to go up once, that would have been too much. It would have been we weren't ready for it. But we figure out that it's not by testing it and by doing stuff in the back with it, having our demo team test some of the workouts, test those workouts, go up and down it three times. And, you know, there's always the if I can do it factor. And what that is, if I can fucking do it, all of them can do it. And so, you know, I did the pegboard a few times and, like, yeah, I'm like, okay, if I can do it, you guys should be able to do it. I didn't say that to them, but that's what goes through my mind.
Did you envision that few athletes being able to do it, though? Or did you think more of them would be able to accomplish it?
Dude, I was shocked, personally, for me.
I thought more would be able to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I thought more would be able to do it. But, you know, of course, that what's skewed about that, if I can do it, I haven't also done 3 days of grueling competition. I didn't do Murph with body armor on before I tried it out. But still, if I can do it.
That's one of those things that if you have done it, you can do it. But if you've never done it.
Here's the thing. Here's the other thing that no one talks about with that I tell people is the reality of the pegboard. You get on there and you get up there and you've never done anything like that. And with the clear wall, with the fans, you get scared. It's high and it's scary and you don't understand the consequences of falling. So you start questioning yourself.
Tense up.
The fear of it really got a lot of people. You'd watch people just peg, no problem. And then they get to a certain point and all of a sudden they're like really slow. And it's because they were high. When I was playing around on it, I'd look down and go, okay, you're kind of high. You don't, when you, as a spectator, you look at it and it looks moderately high. But as an athlete on that wall up there, especially with the clear so you can just see everything, it's higher than you think. And so people definitely got scared when they got up there.
When you program stuff, I've always said that it influences, especially at the regional level, it influences the programming across the world in gyms.
Yeah,
so,
for sure.
Like you said, when we're pushing boundaries, like with a pegboard, I guarantee, we already had a pegboard in my gym, but I guarantee, you know,
yeah,
10 or 15% of the gyms out there went out and bought a pegboard.
For sure.
When you started pushing the weights heavier, people start doing heavier Metcons.
Yep. You know, let me speak to that real quick, if you don't mind me interrupting.
That's okay.
The first place we saw that was the 2008 games. And here's why I say the first place we saw that was those games. We did 21-15-9 thruster and chest to bar pull-up. That was one of the workouts at the event. And we purposely didn't call it Fran because the standard we were using was chest to bar pull-up. And we didn't want the chest to bar pull-up to become the known standard to do on Fran. But what happened after that is everyone started thinking, oh, the chest of our pull-up is – they actually took it too far and started doing the chest of our pull-up as a standard for every workout.
Exclusively, right.
Yeah, so after those games, that became like the standard. And there's been moments like that for other things. You know, you look back at the Open when we did the hand release push-up. All of a sudden, every workout that had push-ups was hand release push-up. And so we're very aware of that. And there's other times we look at things and standards and we're like, all right, this is going to be very influential in the standard and how to do it.
Right. That's kind of what I was getting at for my question is because it affects more than just the games, right? It affects like the affiliate base and like the kind of almost like the progress of fitness. People call CrossFit the tip of the spear. It's like, okay, which direction is the spear going to go?
Yep.
You know, do you guys think about that consciously and be like, okay, when we look at these athletes, we see people that are approaching, you know, Olympic level in weightlifting. But we were way off Olympic level in gymnastics and we couldn't even make a high school cross country team. Like maybe when we program some of these things that are beyond our level, let's say like, you know, you have to do a 10 second static handstand hold or something like that. Like, you know, totally different than we've been doing. Do you guys do that deliberately to try to kind of push forward for the following year and year after that to try to round out the sport? Or is it kind of like one of those things like this would be an awesome challenge to see these guys try to overcome, and then as a byproduct of that,
it's both. It's like you said, it'd be an awesome challenge for them to overcome, and as a byproduct, the community's now giving more focus on the community's, you know,
weaknesses
influenced by. Yep, target your weaknesses, come after that, and I think we've done a good job of that. We could probably even do it better, but it's you know, even in the Open, a great example of that is putting muscle ups in the Open. Look how many people get
their first muscle up right.
Because it's put in there. And then this year, look how many people got their first bar muscle up. Yeah, so even at that stage, that stuff, I would say that's there maybe even more because that affects hundreds of thousands of people where the games, you know, there's not a lot doing, but it's still influential. But
right.
The Open is a point where that happens for sure.
I love the influx of the 20-foot marker, right? Even into the overhead lunge.
Yeah.
You know, and that made some sort of distance to be traveled and you could still video it on your phone, which was great. But it did pose a problem from some smaller affiliates, right?
Yes, and, it did.
Yeah. And so you had people.
I heard about that.
Yeah. You had people, right, who were like, you had 25, 30 athletes registered for the Open and you're in a 1,000-square-foot warehouse.
Yep.
You're running like 10 heats and you're there for a long time.
You know, at that point, it was just like the test and the implementing that new standard was priority over the logistics of someone doing it in their gym. And what I mean by that is like, hey, you know, maybe you go to another gym in town and you guys do it with them, or maybe you get creative on how you do it. But that element, and that we're able to incorporate walking lunge with a distance covered, I think was really cool, and I was proud of that, and it was necessary, and it's expressed well. And it does suck that for some gyms it was a pain in the ass, but the value of it was really high. And I'd almost say for a majority of gyms, I could say majority confidently, it wasn't an issue.
Yeah. Right. I think that there's no space issue if you do a 20-foot line next year with handstand walks.
Yeah, no issue at all.
There's no issue. So,
since we're talking about the Open, Dave, I got a little bit of a bone to pick with you.
Yes.
These cryptic pictures that you post,
yeah,
they make no sense. And I think I'm a pretty smart guy. Yeah. So people will come to me and they're like, "All right, Blair, you're pretty smart. Like, what does this mean?" And I look at this fire hydrant with a steak next to it and the water thing, and I'm like, "Oh, well, it's definitely going to be, you know, rowing and, you know, whatever, because that's on the water."
At the time,
how do you come up with this stuff?
At the time I take them, they make complete sense to me, and I justify them all in ways, and I'm like, "Oh, that is totally this, and that makes sense because this relates to that. This is perfect.
It's obvious.
It's obvious." The picture of the the male, the female, and the transgender.
Right.
That and the it was perfect because the workout then was a triplet, and it was it had all the elements of, and the there was something that reminded me of a wall ball. I don't remember the workout exactly, but it all made sense to me. And you know what? At the end of the day, that's all that matters, that it made sense to me. Even the fire hydrant.
It's like my jokes, bro. I say a lot of
it
jokes that only make sense to me, right? Yep. And I start laughing.
And you might not ever figure out the workout based off my clues, but it doesn't matter because to me it was a clue and it made sense to me. And so
it gets people talking and it's fun. It's a little bit of a... I don't know what it's like. It's not marketing, but it's like
entertainment.
It's
entertainment
for sure.
It's buzz. So creates interest, gets people talking.
The workout that I hate the most is from like 3 years ago. Open workout, right? And it's the 5 shoulder overhead, 10 deadlift, 15 box jump, AMRAP for 10 minutes. Yeah. Yeah, I hate that workout.
Okay,
at 115. Okay, so every time you post something, I guess that workout in hopes to make it so you don't do it. You're like, I don't want Alderman to be right. So even if it is that, I'm going to change it. Do you look? Not towards me, obviously, but yep. do you look at the community, and if everybody is kind of guessing it, you still have the power to change it.
Okay, so at the stage that that's all happening, the reality is nothing's changing. Like, okay. the open workouts are pretty much wrapped up a few weeks before the open, and because of making those demo videos, because of making graphics, because of all that stuff that goes into it, at this stage, they're fixed. And the open... The open in the first couple of years, yeah, like we were coming up with some of the workouts the week of. But as our presentation of them, and as all of that developed, and as just for logistics and for the team and for the things we do create, they're fixed and they're decided a few weeks out, maybe 3 weeks out. And
3 weeks from the open or 3 weeks from release?
3 weeks from week one, everything's set.
Okay.
Yeah, 3 or 4 weeks from week one, happening, everything's set, and basically nothing is changing. And so... You know, and then on my Instagram, for example, or even on any of the CrossFit or CrossFit Games, once that stuff starts happening, the comments, I'm not reading anything. When there's 1,000 comments on like what I might read, I'll read the latest in the feed, like just if I see it. But you know, I'm not actively going through and looking at some of that stuff. Except for when I have challenges, when I put out a challenge for, you know, then I'll have.
I won one of those before. I won a TDC challenge.
Yeah, you did.
Did you really?
I did.
Which one was that?
I don't freaking remember. It was double unders and muscle ups, but yeah. I won it. Yeah.
How about that?
I was just quick.
Just quick so on the quick.
Draw, submitting it.
Yeah, and I was like, "Hey, did I make it? Did I get it? Did I get it?" I sent an email, I think, after that. And I was like, "Hey, Dave, did I get it?" And he's, bro, you won.
So, you know what I recently started doing is I actually recently started blocking people and deleting comments. I didn't for the first couple of years I was on Instagram, but then just recently I said, "Ah, fuck it, I don't care if you're gonna talk shit or you're gonna say something stupid or you're just off.
You're off.
It's no loss to me." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I've enjoyed, and again, it's only in the instances that I'll see him. I look at, if I see it in the feed coming through, I'll be like, "Ah, you dickhead."
What level does somebody have to do in order to get a block? Right? Can they say something critical? Can they?
Critical, usually. I don't mind about critical, but like when you talk shit or just say, look at this dumbass or stuff like that.
Like if you said in person, I'd actually punch you, so therefore I'm going to block
good,
you.
That's a good, you know, it's funny on that note is no one's ever said anything to me in person at any of these events I've ever been to like that, but you see it on social media all the time, and it's like, where are you guys out in the real world, you know?
Right.
Talk shit in the real world. You know, it doesn't happen.
Spin back 10 years or whatever. You've talked about how you got into CrossFit through the military, but I don't really know the story about how your relationship with Greg Glassman and even like the beginning of the CrossFit Games kind of came to be.
In 2006, I was stationed out here in Monterey at the Defense Language Institute. And at the time, I'd already been doing CrossFit for about a year. So while I was stationed there, Monterey Language School, I was living at the ranch, and I'd already been doing CrossFit for about a year.
Well, you were living at the ranch?
Mm-hmm. There's no house out there, though, right?
Yeah, there's a couple houses.
Oh, there's houses.
Okay. Yeah. Where are the houses?
I grew up there, okay. Up on top of the hill.
Oh, all right.
Okay. Yeah, I grew up there. That's where I spent, you know, my life.
Right.
So at Monterey, I knew that CrossFit was out of Santa Cruz. Been doing CrossFit for about a year. So I started commuting over to Santa Cruz and started working out with them. I met Greg early on, and you know, he's very gracious. And
was he coaching classes?
Yeah, he was. The classes I took at the time, he wasn't. Tony Budding, I took a few classes with him. Nicole, she was doing classes. Annie, all of them were doing classes back then. I did a workout there. I did Fight Gone Bad, and Greg was teaching that. So I went through then, met him then. And then, you know, he offered for me to train there for free because he's very supportive of the military. So I started training there when I could. On the weekends, I'd go there a lot. After school, after DLI, sometimes I'd go. Then I went to a level one, and then I just hung out a lot. He eventually asked me to help out at a level one, helped out at a level one, and he'd asked me to go to different level ones and never said no, just started helping a lot, being available to do whatever, just moving chairs and just hanging out with him and learning all I could and just being there. And it was almost like an internship process, and I wasn't striving for anything big, or I wasn't trying. I didn't have any grand scheme. I'm just like, hey, I'm in the Navy. I'm going to help these guys out, and I'm going to do this on the side and learn a lot, learn about CrossFit, learn about fitness from you know, the man who created it all. And so I got my foot in the door for opportunities to work level ones and to travel with him and the team teaching level ones. And so that was where, you know, that's how that all started. My relationship with Greg and CrossFit started just with working level ones and being part of that team.
And this is in the span of like a year or two?
Yeah, this is a span of over about a year. The whole, this lasted about all of 2006. And then in 2007, so I've been working for CrossFit now with the seminar team, got a job. Greg and I became close friends. In 2007, I took him out to the ranch to show him my parents' property. And when we were there, he said, hey, wouldn't it be really cool to do an event out here? And his whole thing was the Woodstock of Fitness. And
right,
I said,
like,
yeah. I said, let's do it. Let's try it. And so that was the birth of the 2007 CrossFit Games. And that conversation on the ranch, you know, I started planning them and organized a small little get-together that grew quickly.
Yeah. So did you, who programmed for the first CrossFit Games?
Well, the first workout was a chipper workout. I mean, not a chipper, a hopper.
The hopper
workout.
So
we pulled the workout of the hopper. And then we just decided we wanted to do a run, and we wanted to do a total, CrossFit total. And so what the original intent of the CrossFit Games that year was, so we were going to have three events, one CrossFit, one strongman essentially, and one endurance event. And we thought we'd give cash prizes for each of them. So if you won an event, you got a cash prize. We thought we'd draw the endurance community to come because of the endurance event, and we draw the strongman community to come because of the strongman event. But then the CrossFitter would actually win it all because he's, you know, the well-rounded athlete. No strongman came. No endurance athlete came. But we wanted to draw him in with those tests, and it was all CrossFitters who came. And so that was the original intent. And the CrossFit workout was a hopper workout. So really, the hopper programmed the CrossFit workout, and then Greg and I just decided on those elements, having a run and the CrossFit total.
Yeah, man. It's just like pure basic tests. Yeah, exactly. It's kind of cool. Yeah. So from then to now, obviously it's been a huge change, and now it's way more sophisticated. We talked a lot already about programming and everything like that, and like the sport kind of coming from its infancy to more, you know, maybe teenage years or adulthood, hopefully down on the horizon.
Tweens.
But with that, I mean, you're going to get a lot of grown-up problems, right? And, you know, some of that is just, you know, hate, whatever. That's not a real problem. But talk about some of the problems that you guys have had to overcome during this growth. I know one, on the athlete side, you know, performance-enhancing drugs has been something that CrossFit's had to deal with. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that as well.
Okay. I'd like to think we're already in the adult years. We're past the teen, tween, even though it's only 10 years in existence.
Less temper tantrums. Right, yeah. Staying out early.
I think we're dealing with adult problems already and have been for a few years. You know, some of the problems. Well, since you brought it up, the drug stuff. Here's the thing about the drug issue. Not issues, but the drug world in CrossFit. Do people use drugs? Yeah, for sure. I'd be lying if I said no. If I sat here and said nobody's using drugs. Do I think the top athletes are the ones who are winning? No, they're not. And here's why. Because we test them year-round. Dan Bailey gets tested year-round. Rich Froning gets tested year-round. There's a whole list of people who are tested 365 days of the year on a schedule to be.
Right.
Do some people show up to the regionals who have used drugs to get there or might be using them there? For sure. Do we bust them? Yes, we have. We bust some people. Do the people who qualify to go to the games, were they using something at regionals? No, because we test them all and we know if they were or were not. We test people during the open. We catch a few, usually from leads. People give us leads. Are there a group of people in the open using? Yeah, for sure. But again, the people who matter, the people at the competitions who are winning, the people who get the money at the end, they are not. Now, here's another place I want to take that. Is there some athletes who might be on? Here's the thing. You take a company like Belco, you guys who are probably familiar with Richard Conte and the Barry Bonds thing. They're a Bay Area company. They have designer drugs that are really hard to detect. I don't think those, and the stuff like Lance Armstrong was doing, all that stuff, that's not yet in our community because it's too expensive. Because the amount of athletes who are making the big money just aren't there yet. That the designer drugs and the stuff that we can't test for, I don't think will be a problem for another few years. That'll come eventually, but it's not a problem yet. But then when it gets to that stage, I mean, there's it's just, you know, it's trying to catch up and it's trying to adapt the testing. Just like, and those are the problems the Olympics have. Right. They're having to stay ahead of, you know, the testing, and they're not able to catch everything.
Right. The entire country of Russia is banned from international competition right now.
Yeah.
Can any Russians compete at the CrossFit Games?
That's a good question. I don't think one qualified, so it's not an issue.
All right, good.
But, you know, so I do believe Rich, and I do believe the top guys, and I do believe the top women. They are all clean because we test them. But again, I'm not going to sit here and be naive and say that no one in CrossFit is using drugs. We're a community. You know, we're a community like any other large community. We probably have rapists and murderers, too, somewhere in the community. But that's not CrossFit's fault. That's just the fault of a large community. You have all of that. So you're going to have liars and cheats in our community, too. And it's just the fault of being a very large community. Or not the fault, but the...
Just part of it.
Happens.
And you just do your best to try to stay ahead of it. And so you said, like, you know, maybe these designer drugs are coming down the pike and we just do our best to keep progressing the testing protocols year after year.
And we try to test more people year after year and we try to improve it. That's one of the testing is one of the elements we look at and say, how can we make this better? And this stuff's really expensive too. I mean, I'd love to test every athlete at the regionals. We just can't do that. That would be cost prohibitive at this point. Maybe not in a few years, but we do test. Everyone needs to know we do test the top. Everyone who qualifies at the regionals and goes to the games, they're tested there. So they are tested at that stage. And all the results are back at this stage, and no one popped that qualified to go to the games.
Hmm. Has that happened before? A regional qualifier popped at a test at regionals, so they could not go to the games?
No, I'm thinking we had some female in Canada pop. I don't think she qualified though. She was like on the one spot out. We had someone at the games pop a long time ago in 2009, your games.
Yeah.
And we didn't announce it just because the person was in the military and we decided they asked us not to. Hey, I'm in the military. It'd be really bad for my job. And that was then. Now we wouldn't do that. If you pop now, we will announce it no matter what circumstance.
The integrity of the sport is very important at this point.
Yeah, exactly. You know. That was then, and we could do that then. It was much smaller, but we wouldn't do that now.
I know even like for myself, you know, I mean, I'm a stronger athlete, you know, in terms of, you know, my level. I get asked for a random, I get asked emails so people know where I'm at and for if they want to randomly drug test me. I don't know if that's because I'm a stronger athlete or because I've been knocking on the door for a few years or by association.
I've been tipping them off to you, bro.
I don't know why you're on the list. I can't speak to that. You know, I don't do, like there's some details that I'm not involved in. And like the testing team, the guys who are in charge of that for us, they handle who pick, who
I think it'd be a great show. I'd love to be tested. Then we could put it on the podcast, you know? So anyway,
also on that note, on the testing note,
sorry, the mic away. I forgot where I was going with that. What was I going to say?
We can come back to it.
Yep.
You know, I think that
people love to talk about steroids no matter what. So.
Oh, yeah. Here's what I was going to say about that. That's this one I was going to say. It's interesting because it's so easy to say all of our people are on something because they're so strong and they look so fucking good doing it. But the reality is that's just the results of our program. It's something no one's ever – people aren't seeing – making you guys so strong and look like bodybuilders. Yeah, I'm not saying you guys look like bodybuilders, but have, you know what I mean?
That kind of definition.
Having a really athletic, ripped, you know, strong physique. How can Rich look like that or Dan Bailey look like that and not be on something? It baffles people because they just don't know. They don't understand CrossFit and they don't understand the efficacy of the program and the results.
And how much Rich and Dan train. Those guys are training all the time.
The world doesn't know because it's never been done before. So it's like this is all new data. We talk about this. This is probably too big a topic for this podcast and the time we have left. We talk about what are the long-term ramifications of all this training, you know, like aging athletes. We don't have the data yet. We don't know. And like, you know, the fact that people's physiques look like this and they're able to lift this much weight. Yeah, like you said, there's going to be people out there using. Absolutely. But there's also guys that are there just the result of
work and the program
training,
and the program
with
the training stimulus.
You know,
it's interesting about the data too. This is separate than what you were saying, but I do want to mention it and address it real quick. Is people always, you know, people especially outside of CrossFit, well, there's been no test done to prove that it works. You don't need a fucking test. Go into any gym and look at the results of all the people. That's all the real world data you need to see that this works. Because guess what? I don't care if this works in a tube or in a laboratory. I need to see how this works on real people that go into a gym and what happens to them after 3 months. Because that's real life. And that's the results. And that's where you guys see that. See the results. You guys all understand as affiliate owners
people
and trainers.
Totally.
Yeah. And so it changes people, not only how they look, but also in how they approach life and how they gain more confidence.
Yeah.
And so the program works, and those of us in the community know that. And all the people who say that it doesn't are just naive.
Anyway, they're just not there yet, man. They might be coming.
It's so funny. In the gym. My go-to for people in this is they've been working out in the gym, you know, 5 days a week. Hour, 2 hours, doing whatever they've been doing. And they come to the gym, right? They come to my affiliate or to Blair's, and they work out for 7 minutes, 8 minutes, and they want to die. And they're breathing really, really heavy. And they look at me and they go, dude, I work out 10 hours a week, and I just worked out for 7 minutes, and I want to die. There's something wrong with your workout. And I always flip it around and I go, dude, you work out for 10 hours a week and you couldn't last 7 minutes? And there's something wrong with my workout?
That's good, yeah. You know there's something wrong with your workout.
There's something wrong with your workout, you know? Well, we have a lot of people who have been like really excited that we get you on the show.
Okay. Yeah, by the way, man, thanks again.
Yeah, thank
for
you guys.
This.
Like I said on Julie's show, I only do these with people who I consider my friends.
Yeah, and I heard that. I listened to the first 5 minutes and you said our name. That was nice.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
So we have a lot of listener questions, and we did touch on some of them, but
but people here, that participate, we want to shout them out a little bit. So
okay,
yeah,
that's cool.
And I'm just picking one here from B Patty 05. And does Dave like the direction of the affiliate cup and how it's become such a competitive division? Competitive in the way of super teams are basically becoming more common than maybe true affiliates. Athletes unaffiliating and then athletes traveling 4 hours. I feel like they just want to name names, but they're not. But this person, but you know what I mean? But, you know, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, you know what? I like it. I think it's kind of just been the natural evolution of it and the super teams happening, and, you know, it's kind of cool. I don't have a problem with it. Again, it's like it's just the evolution. Could we just stomp that and say you can't make teams? It has to be everyone from your affiliate. That'd be hanging on to the past a little too much. And I think the natural direction it's gone is fine. I think it's cool. I think it's cool that people are moving to different areas to be on a team and, you know, to make it work within the rules we've written.
Right.
You know, it's kind of unique. It's neat.
And they're investing a ton of their own time and money to do it.
Yep.
You know, so it's not
there's
like
a lot that goes. You have to think about those athletes, what they're committing to do that. And so you have to respect them too, you know? So yeah, I don't have an issue with it.
This is a really good question, and I'm going to elaborate on it just a little bit. Kieferosity said, favorite games event ever, but then also we watch events in real time, and you get to kind of observe this stuff from a 10,000-foot level, right? Do you have a favorite year where you looked at the Open, the Regional, and then the year, and you were like, that was like poetry. It was like it came off just exactly how I wanted.
It was 2011 for sure. That's the year that he liked the best.
Right. And then also, what's your favorite games event ever?
You know, what's interesting is that's a very difficult question because it's been so many years of this, so many years of programming. And, you know, when I visit a lot of CrossFit gyms and people always ask me, what's your favorite CrossFit gym? And I decided at one point, I'm just going to answer the question with this answer. It's the last one I visited. Because it's fresh in my mind, and it was right there. And there's so many different things that make a good CrossFit gym. Well, in terms of what's my favorite year for the CrossFit Games, I'm going to cop out and use that same answer.
Oh, come on.
It was last year because it's the most recent. And you know what? It's the most recent on. Actually, I'll answer it with this. It's going to be this year. My favorite games is going to be this year. But that being said, some workouts I liked. I loved Murph last year. I loved the rope climb that we did at the games. Legless and thruster, that was kind of inspiration for this year's regional workout. Nancy, because it was the first workout that we ever did on the floor of the StubHub. That is another Amanda, I'm sorry. Yeah. Amanda was my favorite, one of my favorites. Naughty Nancy, also, because it was so unique.
The berm run and everything.
The berm run and then the overhead squats at that weight, at that rep, is really high weight. The muscle up biathlon, another favorite. I have a lot of favorites. I like them.
We agreed that Ben and I agreed that this last regional workout, event 7 with the rope climb muscle up, was probably the most rope climb thruster
yeah.
was probably the most exciting event that we ever remembered.
That was it.
Perfect
played out
position.
It played out well, and you know
so
what?
What
helped that a lot was just the level of competition. It's so much more competitive. Everyone's close. The points are closer.
Right.
Everyone's in it, and the battles for those last points that really helped. That what you guys are describing.
This question I really like. I probably won't like the answer much, but maybe I will. Maybe I'll get surprised. The question comes from, where is it? Well, it doesn't matter. But I'm sorry, whoever wrote this question, I don't know where it's at. But the question was, who would make a better Navy SEAL, myself or Blair?
I'm gonna.
Can say it.
You can answer exactly
how you
feel.
Oh, here. Let me just be completely honest. I think for as far as the physical attributes and what it takes, I think he's better poised to make it through the training because he's lighter weight and he has a little more endurance background. I think if you two were going to go to Buds, I would put my money on him. I will say this though: you never know who's going to make it. It's all mental. It's really not physical. We've had Stanford swimmers and world class triathletes try to go through Buds and quit and not make it through because it's so mental. But if I were to put my money, the physical part is a big part of it. I would say he has the better build and physique and size to make it through. You know, when you're as big as you are, you're carrying a lot of weight. You're taking a lot of pounding on your body. Now I'm just talking to go through Buds. Once you get through Buds, I know plenty of SEALs that are as big as you or bigger because then that type of training is done. But getting through Buds is the first step in becoming a SEAL. And that stage, I think he's...
That mentality that you're talking about, I don't know if I would have this. I'd like to think I would be strong enough mentally to get through it.
Oh, you already lost.
But
it's
I don't
want
to like toot my
Trump
own horn too
right
much
here.
In front of Ben. But I remember you know, the guys did do SEAL Fit down there, and they've had a lot of games athletes come through.
Yep.
And I was not there personally, but I've heard anecdotally that Miko Salo had like an unprecedented run through that program.
Yeah,
where
it's cool.
Did you ever hear that?
I didn't hear. I heard. I knew he went, but I didn't hear much about it.
Yeah. I heard that basically, I mean, this is like the type of thing that breaks people down.
Yeah.
Right. And
yep,
just
exactly.
To come out of it a better human overall. Yep. And the story I heard was that the guy was, he's just like a coffin nail.
Yep.
You know, he's just so.
Of course he is, though. You know, Miko Salo, he's a legend in our community.
He's a legend.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool to hear that. But
I think maybe the last question we have here, as we're running up on about an hour, and is from Jepri, whatever. I don't know. J-E-P-R-I-Y. But somebody said they love watching the games, but one thing they look forward to seeing is who makes the demo team. And they also want to know, how do you choose them, and how early do they test the events, and then do you make adjustments based on their feedback?
Okay, so here's who makes the demo team? It's generally people who finish just outside of qualifying for the games and have been to the games before and are really good. And have been to the games before.
Not guys who hit you up outside the restroom.
No.
I did that this year.
Yeah, he did. And so you have to have some experience at the games. You have to be proven. You have to have done well this year, generally speaking. I'd like to take sixes and sevens across the board, but there's not always sixes and sevens that I even want on the team. And also, you know what's an important part of it is being someone that I have a relationship with a lot of times as a friend or as someone I know that I know I can work with. Because being in that environment and being that close to everything that's happening is extremely challenging, and it's a stressful environment. So I need to know, it can't be a complete unknown who's also a complete unknown who has kind of a controversial their controversial character in CrossFit. So because I wouldn't want to be dealing with that there. At the stage they're testing workouts, most of the workouts are already programmed, but they're testing them for some of the new implements that we have that only show up the week of. There'll be stuff that Bill makes that I won't have my hands on until we get to the StubHub, especially on the team side. So they'll test stuff like that there. Do they have a say? Yeah, you know, I listen to their feedback and I listen to how it affected them. And sometimes we listen, sometimes we don't. The testing that happens before the games is the most important testing, and that usually involves not demo team athletes, because it'll involve someone local that I can lean on to test workouts. And the feedback I get is from them doing them, from them watching and seeing how it affects them, seeing how long it takes to do one element and another element. And I take notes on the duration of each element. So the feedback that they give me is them doing the event and how long it takes and how it affects them, and then making adjustments from there.
I never told you this story, but in 2012, Dave invited me to go test a workout. I wasn't going to be on the demo team, but to test a workout, and I couldn't do it. I was out of town doing something. I was really bummed.
Yeah,
What
I'll do too often is I'll invite a lot of different people to come test workouts. So this person's good at that, or this person's strong here. You come and sometimes oftentimes when I have people test, I don't have them test the final version. I'll change the reps slightly, or I'll change usually the reps or the rounds, because just so they don't know exactly what it is. And then I'll give a different expression of it or a different version. But I saw what I needed to see from the test.
Is it nice having a guy like Rich Froning, who's not an individual athlete anymore, be able to maybe do some individual workouts? Because still.
Yeah, for sure. I had him test some of the regional workouts for me. This year for the games, I haven't really leaned on him to test anything. Last year for the games, I threw him a few to test. It is nice to have someone like him, though, to be able to do exactly what you're saying. Yep.
That is very cool.
Who do you lean on the women's side?
Well, to test?
Yeah. I feel like the women's field does – We're men, so we talk about like what we know, especially. But the women's field is fascinating to me, and like the
international ladies especially. I won't use a woman to test. So let's say we're doing 21:15.9 thruster rope climb. I just need one person to test. You know, just having a guy test that, it's a good translation of how it's going to turn out for the women too.
Okay.
Unless there's some unique element that's new, and I think the women might have more trouble with it,
like legless rope climbs or something like that,
then I'll have a female test. And it depends who hasn't qualified, who has qualified, who's available. I've used a lot of people to test.
Right.
Well, we've had a chance to sit down and talk pretty much everything. I mean, we always talk about being able to give people a behind the scenes look into CrossFit or into athletes, but this is probably the most candid, and obviously, I mean, this is our best source we've ever had on the show when it comes to that. So I mean, we appreciate your time, man.
Yeah, thank you, Dave. Guys. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks a lot.
I got one last question for you.
Okay, go.
Your hair's getting pretty long. Is this like a yearly thing now? You're going to cut it right before the games?
Yeah, so every year I grow my hair out, and then at the Thursday night before the games, I cut my hair. One year I went highlights. I liked that. No one liked it. A lot of people didn't like
that. You going to bring it back? to see if maybe people need to see it again.
Maybe we'll bring the highlights. I'm going to do something.
Don't bring it back. Don't bring it back.
A lot of people didn't like the highlights. I did. I enjoyed it. I don't know what I'm going to do this year. I'm going to keep everyone guessing. Do something fun.
All right. Well, we look forward to it. We'll be down there. I know you'll be busy, but hopefully we'll get to wave at you across the crowd.
Yeah, for sure.
And
everybody knows where to follow you because you don't follow anybody.
Yeah.
But follow Dave at the Dave Castro, and then you can follow Blair and I. And you guys make sure you go to BTB Podcast and subscribe to our newsletter.
Yeah. Rank us on iTunes, 5 stars.
Yes, please do that. And look forward to seeing you guys at the games.
Yep. See you soon.